Good evening. Please join me in the Anabakoach. Anabakoach, Gedulat Shemincha, Tati Tzerura, Alephet Gimel, Yud Tav Tzadi, Kabel Rinat, Amcha Sadbeinu Taharenu Nora Kufrei Shayin Sintet Nun Nagibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kevavat Shamrem Kufrei Shayin Sintet Nun. Kra Satan, tear up the negative side. Tear up the Satan. Keep him out of your life. Build your protection shield. Na Gibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kevavat Shamrem Nun Gimel Dalad Yud Kaf Shin Barchem Tacharem Rachame Sidkatcha Tami Gamlem Betet Resh Tzadi Taf Gimel Chasin Kadosh Birotucha Nael Adata Het Kuf Bet, Tet Nun Ayin. Yachid Geye, Lamcha Pine, Zokre Kedushatach. Yud Gimel Lamed, He Zayin Kuf. These six letters form a sequence that manifests the energy to spread the knowledge of Kabbalah through the fifth millennium. The sixth millennium, actually, through the 5,000 years. We are in the year 5769. The Resh and the Zion, the two letters of the month of Sivan, the Resh that created the constellation Tumim, the twins, the Gemini, and the Zion that created the planet Kohav, which is the planet Mercury. And Kohav, the word planet, means both the planet Mercury and generally planets and stars. And the word Kohav is spelled in a very special way. It's spelled Kahvav Kahvet. Kahvav is a gematria of 26, which represents the tetragrammaton, which represents the energy of Hashem. Energy represents the energy of fulfillment. Kaf Bet, it has a gematria of 22, and it represents the 22 letters of the Hebrew Aleph Bet. The concept of a planet, the concept of Mercury, is the unity of the light or the fulfillment with the vessel. Shavatenu kabel Ushma tiakatenu Yodea Talumot Shinkufav Tzadiyutav. And the last line is said in a whisper, which we refer to as silently. I'm going to read a verse from the Zohar to bring the energy of the Zohar into our class. And I just finished reading a really interesting verse. It's a rather long one, but so I will shorten the Aramaic. Vayechi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kunenei Aleinu Maaseh Yadeinu Kunenehu. V'tachatzi Ilmalei La Chav Adam La Yit'am Ta'ama Demota B'chai Alma V'zinati Ayer Le'almin Acharanin Aval Begin Dehav Ta'am Ta'ama Demota Ad La Ye'u Le'inun Almin V'yitpashat Rucha Mechai Gufa Ve'ashar Le'bachai Alma Verucha Istachya Binchar Inur Dekabla Onsha. Come and see, if man, the word is Adam, would not have sinned, he would not have tasted the taste of death in this world during his passing into the other realms. However, due to his sinning, he does taste the taste of death prior to entering into these realms. The spirit gets divested from his body, from this body, and leaves it in this world. The ruach is cleansed in the Dinur River to receive its punishment, and then enters into the terrestrial garden of Eden. Another vessel of light that is precisely similar to the form of the body, which it previously had on this world, is ready for it. It vests and prepares itself in it, and there, in the Garden of Eden, is its permanent residence. On the first of each month and Shabbat, the Ruach connects to the Neshama and ascends to be crowned very high, in the most high Garden of Eden. This is what is written, and it shall come to pass that every new moon, which is a part of the verse from Isaiah chapter 66. In Hebrew, there's five parts of the soul, but in our world, there's generally just three parts, the lower three, what we call the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama. And what this verse is describing is that death is the entrance to the spiritual worlds for the soul. That when someone dies, their soul leaves their body. But are we talking which level of soul? And it's explaining that each of the levels of souls go to a different location. And it explains what happens in those different locations. There's a spiritual body that appears to be exactly the same as our physical body. And when the soul is injected, invested in, is wearing that garment of a body, which is a body of light, it is able, after its cleansing from this world in Gehinom, or the river of Dinur, as it was said, the soul is able to, the Ruach is able to go to the Garden of Eden, the lower Garden of Eden. And the Neshama goes to the upper Garden of Eden. The upper Garden of Eden, on Shabbat and on new moons, the Ruach rejoins with the Nefesh, with the Neshama, and elevates to the level of the upper Garden of Eden. We're talking about different levels of energy, different levels of consciousness, and unifying things in the spiritual world in different ways. But it's explaining what happens and why a particular holiday called Rosh Chodesh, or Shabbat, what is happening on the spiritual levels, and what we do on the physical level affects our souls, even prior to our death. And the verse is, it's really interesting to understand it all in these metaphors. Does anybody have any questions? Again, we were going to talk about the Big Bang, and we may still do that later today, but right now, the person who asked that question is running late and hasn't arrived yet. So if she does arrive, we'll just speak of it. If not, we'll wait till next week. The subject I want to talk about tonight, then, is about consciousness. There is an interesting verse, just a few interesting verses, in this week's parasha, which is called Shlech Lecha, which means tours. And on the historical level, in the second year, on the first of Tammuz, which is coming up next Monday and Tuesday, the Moses was given permission by God to send for himself tourists into the land of Israel. Most English translations say they refer to these men as spies. And these men returned to the nation after having spent 17 days after having spent 40 days touring Israel, the land, or spying on Israel. And we need to understand what is the difference between being a tourist and being a spy. And I write about it a bit in my email letter. So I don't want to repeat myself. I'm just going to go touch on the concept. A tourist looks at the world around him when he's touring another location, and he finds that's amazing, that's interesting, that's really nice, but he never sees what he sees as impacting himself. He's not part of what he sees. He's distant from what he sees. But a spy is going to look at how it affects his agenda. He's going into the place to spy out, if he's an army spy, if he's a military spy, to spy out the defenses. He's invested into his agenda. These 12 men went into the land of Israel. These were not spiritually negative people. These were righteous people. These were the leaders of the 12 tribes of Israel. They're referred to as the Nasiim, which means prince. But they're essentially the leaders of the tribes of Israel. They left Egypt. We're only in the second year of this trek through Israel, trek through the desert. And Moses sends these men to tour or spy on the land. And they go up, and the story explains it, they go up. But before they go, Moses says to one, your name is now Yehoshua, instead of what his name was before. And the difference is he added a yud, one of the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, that represents the name of God. He invested him with the energy of God. He connected him to the level of God. And that was done prior to them leaving on this mission of touring or spying. The 12 men went up into the land and toured the land or spied on the land. They all were righteous people. They all were chieftains of their tribes. 10 of them agreed on a plan to bring the report back to the people that they brought back. And I'll explain what the report said in a bit. 2 of them, Yehoshua, did not participate in the plan. And the other one is Caleb, who, recognizing that the plan was wrong, but did not know how to protect himself from the strength of ten. So he prayed to God for help and assistance, and he did not follow in their wake. He went on his own path, and his own path was to go to the fathers and mothers, to the cave of Machpelah, where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Sarah, Rivka, and Leah are buried. And he prayed to the fathers and mothers for assistance in resisting the plan of the other ten men. So these two people did not fall into that plan. What was the plan? What was the report? Moses told the 12 to go into the land and see if there is a tree. The Hebrew is very clear. It's in the singular. See if there is a tree, not trees. We know it's not a miss. We know it's not a misspelling. We know it's there's a reason why it says it in the singular. And later on in the reporting the story, they describe, and the Hebrew is again very clear, and it says, "We saw ourselves as grasshoppers, and therefore they saw us the same way as grasshoppers." The story that they came back to the nation with was it is a land of milk and honey. The fruits are huge, and the Midrash says they brought back a grape cluster that took, some say, four men, some say eight men to carry. It was literally a cluster of grapes. Each grape had grown to the size of a watermelon because the energy of the land was so intense and so strong. They said it's a beautiful land. And whenever anybody makes a sentence, such and such happened, it was really good, but they're about to say, everything I've said up to now, don't believe. This is what I really want you to know. And the buts from the ten, the plan was to tell the people the land is too strong. The people of the land live in fortified cities. The people of the land are numerous. And the land eats up the inhabitants because everywhere that they went, city after city was, the Midrash tells us, was exhibiting a burial. Everybody, everywhere they went, people were busy burying people, so they didn't have to be looking for them. And the Midrash teaches us that God did this so they wouldn't be discovered. And they interpreted it as the land was eating up the inhabitants. But what is the idea of the but? Why would they make this plan? Why would they say the land is good but? And it's because of their egos. They were appointed chieftains of the tribe. But they said to themselves, we're chieftains of the tribes only while we're moving from Egypt to the land. But in the land, there will be another chieftain appointed. We will lose our place. We will lose our honors. Because of that, let's not go into the land. Let's have the people not go into the land. We'll stay chieftains. That's what's important. Rather than trusting God, knowing that, hey, if I lose my honors, it means there's somebody better for that position, and it's okay. It's part of the plan. It's part of God's plan. But their attitude was their ego. So that's one lesson we learned from this week's portion. Understanding consciousness. If you distrust what happens to you in the physical world, if you're going against God's plan, it isn't going to happen. So, I mean, there's a story where God said, this is enough. These people have tried me 10 times. I've done all of these miracles, wonders, and helped these people, and they don't appreciate it. That's enough. And Moses again goes up and gets God to agree not to kill the nation. But God says, you wander in the desert for 40 years. And every one of those years, 15,000 of you will die. At the end of 40 years, 600,000, the same 600,000 who left Egypt, will be dead because you all participated in this slander of the land, this lies about the land. You believe their story, you participate in it. When someone comes up to you and tells you a story about a third person, if you believe it, you participate. If you listen, you participate, but not necessarily at the same level of believing it. Ultimately, someone comes to tell you a story, say, thank you very much, let's talk about something else. If they still continue to tell you about the story, this is not a person you need to be around. But that's not the subject of tonight's discussion. The verse where the spies or the tourists describe, we saw ourselves as grasshoppers, and therefore they saw us as grasshoppers, is what I want to talk to you about.
Who said they?
The ten men. The ten men. If we saw ourselves as grasshoppers, and they saw us, is referring to the inhabitants of the land. The Midrash says it's literally three giants. If you go back in the Torah to Genesis chapter 6, there's a whole series of verses that just make everybody crazy, because what are they talking about? They're talking about the B'nai Elohim, the sons of God, who saw the beauty of the women in the earth, on the earth, mated with them and had children. And we are told that there are two types of children that were born from this. One was an angelic entity, which was half angel and half human. And their human half died, or could die. And the angel half could never die. But they couldn't go up to heaven. They had no way, no escape. So over the centuries, their human half died from whatever experiences they had. And they were dragging around these bodies that are dead. They're stuck together, and eventually they all committed suicide, whatever that means. They're described as diving off of cliffs into the ocean, and they disappear. The other types of children that they had are referred to as giants. The last surviving giant, the Midrash says, is that the person we call Goliath in the story of David and Goliath. He was a huge person, right? 8 feet tall in all of these other stories that we hear. Was one of the last giants, or children of giants. But in this time, 300-400 years before David, there were three giants, men of renown, they're called, because the whole world knew about them, and there were three names, which I don't remember their names. It's in the Bible. These three giants were visiting we're living in the land because that's where the energy is. Israel itself is considered the energy center of the world. All metaphysical energy flows through Israel first, and then to the rest of the nation, nations, nest, rest of the continents, rest of the physical world. So the story is they're saying, see us as grasshoppers. We see ourselves as grasshoppers, and they saw us as grasshoppers, meaning the three giants. But what it comes to teach us is very, very important. Remember, do not believe a word I say. But decide for yourself, test for yourself what I suggest that you do. One of the central principles of Judaism is the belief in the resurrection of the dead. Why hasn't the resurrection of the dead taken place? It's because the world, the quantum consciousness of the world, one, doesn't want it, and two, doesn't believe it. Now, what do I mean by that? Doesn't everybody want the peace of the Messiah, of the Mashiach? Aren't you ready for the Mashiach? Do you have your bags packed? You ready to move to Israel? I guess you don't want the Mashiach. What's your consciousness? Are you ready to go? Are you ready to have your comforts taken away from you in exchange for this peace? Are you ready to do the actions that you don't like to do in exchange for this not having to die? Is that the way it's supposed to be? Is that my perception of what Mashiach consciousness means? Every human being needs to achieve a level of consciousness called Mashiach consciousness, personal Mashiach consciousness. And then, and only then, will the Mashiach manifest as a human being. It's not that the Mashiach will come and lead you, but that you will create the Mashiach along with the quantum consciousness of every other human being. And how does that happen? By recognizing you are seen by others the way you see yourself. We mentioned a few weeks ago one level of discussion of this consciousness. Science today teaches that if a tree falls in the forest and there is no human being to hear it, to recognize that it took place, then the tree does not fall. Yes, America.
What if there's animals there?
There are no animals if there's no human being to recognize the animal exists. Our Midrash teaches us that each day of creation, day one, the firmament was created. The waters were separated. Day two, the continuation of the separation of the waters. Day three, what was created on day three? Day four, the sun and the moon were created. Day one was the light, I forgot to mention that. Day five were the plants, the fishes, the oceans. Day six, man. man was created. And our Midrash says that until man was created, all of the others were there in potential, but they didn't happen. Teaching what science is now teaching us. The more science develops, the more they bring back the truth that's always been known in the Kabbalah. How can you explain what I just said to you? The tree falls in the Torah forest and there is no human being to hear it or recognize that it happened. Measure it in some way. The tree didn't fall. How do you relate that to a Midrash, to a man who's in the 10th century or even the 15th century, 1500s, and he is taught as part of his study of Torah during creation, during the 6 days of creation, it was until man happened that no grass grew and no trees grew flowers. No rain happened. Nothing happened because it takes a man's consciousness to create the process of this world. And we have sages, the Baal Shem Tov is one, and there are many others, who teach that our consciousness creates the world that we are in. And previously I've described it, but it's something that we need to hear over and over again. I create my world. And right now there is a phone in my hand, three people sitting in front of me, all of which I have created, and whoever is at the other end of this phone, I have also created. And each of you have created me. And God's job is to take those films, those cinemas of each of our lives that we have created, and manage them so that they work in the physical world sense. So we're all here in the same room. We're all listening to the same conversation on the phone. This is God's doing. We don't control that. But from my perspective, I have created everybody that's listening to my words. Consciousness creates our world. We see each other. We create each other. Now, what does that really mean? There's God. I believe there's God. In one of our earlier classes, we've shown you the discussion. I'm going to drop the phone. Will it fall to the floor? And people answer, of course it's going to fall to the floor. And I say, do you believe it's going to fall to the floor, or do you know it's going to fall to the floor? The resurrection of the dead cannot happen until we know that it can happen. If I have to be on a level of consciousness that says, I have to see someone rise from the dead to know it to be true, that it's possible, then we are going to continue, God forbid, in this maze of pain and suffering that we have created for ourselves, this world of war and unhappiness that we created for ourselves. There are spiritual laws. One of the physical laws is that nothing can in this universe can travel faster than the speed of light. There's another world that says that nothing in their world can travel slower than the speed of light. Everything that happens in that world has an effect on this world. And everything in this world has an effect on that world. And how do we balance the two? Human actions, human consciousness, creates a physical world that is separated from that spiritual world. That's why we can have a world of pain and suffering that isn't in the spiritual. Because we're given free choice. Free choice means I do what I want, in a sense. What does it mean I do what I want? I get all the money in the world. That means everybody else goes hungry and only gets fed if I tell them it's okay. Isn't that the power that I crave? God forbid. I said, God forbid. But could it be the power that I crave? Are there people in this world that seem to act as if they crave that kind of power? What do you want? Alexander the Great had a thought to conquer the world. What was his motivation? I don't know. I'm not Alexander the Great. But I know I have no desire to conquer the world. And yet, the fact that I'm not willing to do so means that my desire to receive is smaller than his. Whatever smaller means in the context of desire to receive. We discuss that spiritually each generation is lower than the generation before. Lower meaning smaller. Lower meaning further from God. Alexander's desire to conquer the world is part of God's plan. Why? Because the world needs to be unified. There doesn't need to be different nations. Yet, God created 70 nations. How do we balance that? What is our consciousness? I want the resurrection of the dead. I am willing to do what it takes that the resurrection of the dead manifest. I tell people I am going to live to be at least 300 more years. When I tell this to people, they laugh. When I told it to my mother at the age of 5, she laughed. Was I channeling truth? Hey, I had a heart attack. My arteries are going to be clogged, God forbid. How can you live 300 more years? There's no medical technology that will allow that. How do you know? Well, we never saw anybody live that long before. Well, the Torah teaches us that Adam lived to be 930 years old. And Methuselah lived to be 969 years old. Oh, that's a metaphor. And some rabbis have written, that's a metaphor. But most of the rabbis say, that's the truth. Our lifespan is to be 1,000 years. How many of you believe that? How many of you who even believe that believe it in your heads but not your hearts? How many of you who believe that can't even envision the concept of knowing it to be true? You create the world you live in. Where do you dream? What do you dream? How much are you willing to dream? You create the world you live in by your consciousness. When someone says to you, you can only earn this much money a year, and you accept that, you create the world you live in. Do you want to change it? to do is change yourself. You want a better job? You want a better spouse? You want a better anything? Health, wealth, more children, whatever any human being has ever desired. Where do you put the limitation on that desire? You create the world you're in. Look at your mirrors. The world you created has a mirror for you. They're called other people. What's the purpose of me in your world? What's the purpose of you in my world? To be each other's mirror. Can you see yourself if there's no mirror in front of you? I'm perfect. And stand in the mirror and see this overweight body. Teenage girls never are happy with their bodies. They live in a society that teaches them that physical beauty is what they are about, God forbid. Is that a right thing? Is that a good thing? Is it the world that they create? Is it the world that I create for them? Where is your consciousness? The tourist said, we see ourselves as grasshoppers, and that's how they saw us. It's such a perfect example of the spiritual truth. Nothing happens in this physical world till you perceive it. The uncertainty principle, which we talked about a few weeks ago, you cannot measure speed and location at the same time. If you measure speed, location is changed. If you measure location, speed is changed. What does it really mean? I'm sorry? Relativity. It's saying that I cannot know something unless I interact with it. And if I interact with it, both it and I are changed. When I measure the speed of an electron, both it and I are changed. That's relativity. When you are created in my life as my mirror, both you and I are changed. When we interact, both you and I are changed. Am I changed for the better? Am I changed for the worse? Have I internalized the lessons that I'm to learn from that interaction? Or have I played out the movie? I have a student who's having a truly horrible experience. She's accused of sexual wrongs against children. She had a baby 2 months ago, and they tore the baby from her arms, did not allow her to participate in its birth, and before its 8th week, it died. Horrible accident. The autopsy says it was suffocated. You know, we've all heard stories of children who die when an adult rolls over them in their sleep. This baby was put in a location where it couldn't breathe, and it died. And I'm being asked by the people around this woman how do I explain this? It's a horrible thing. Everything she's going through is a horrible thing. Am I unkind when I say you created it? Am I being, do I lack mercy when I say to her, you created it? So I wrote and I explained, there are certain souls who have had lifetimes where in order to complete their tikkun, they need a few months to a few years in a physical body. So they come to this world to be here for those few months, and in their passing, give a message for the people around them that are impacted by that story. They're given a message to teach, to learn. You create the world you live in order to learn your life lessons. You live in a generation that has amazing technology of healing. Amazing. The damage to my arteries that was done, that I did with the way I ate, is fixed by the heart medications that I take. Would it be better if I ate differently? Yes. It's not the point. It is the point. It is the message for me. But I don't do it. Why? Why don't I do it? Because I don't believe it. Because I don't know it. Because I'm not willing to change. We create the world we live in. I'm teaching you, but I'm not living up to the level that I have decided I could reach. Do I feel badly about that? Do I berate myself for that? Do I feel guilty because I'm not doing that? No. I recognize that I can reach the level of consciousness of Tehiyat HaMetim, the resurrection of the dead. I can reach that in many ways. I can reach that by creating the technology of medical science. I can reach that by having another person with the ability to raise the dead as a miracle. And there's a million paths between those two points. And a million other paths before you even reach the level of the technology. God creates the cure before the disease. The cure is always consciousness. Because the cause of your world is your consciousness. That baby came into this world learning to control its body, and then learning about the world, if it had lived, but we did. It learned about the world in school. It learned about the world from its mother's milk. It learned about the world by all of the interactions the baby created for itself. What are you going to do about expanding your consciousness? The tools of Kabbalah are designed to use the Hebrew letters. The purpose of the Hebrew letters, one of those purposes, is to expand your consciousness. Yes, America.
Are you saying that we create the circumstances of our life to do? We know what lessons we can get. and we like created like that.
Before you came into this world, Midrash teaches us that for 9 months that you were in utero, you were taught all of the Torah that you need to learn in this lifetime. And all you do in this lifetime, before you were born, the angel came and put the mark in your lip to remind you, forget everything you learned. And all you do in this lifetime is reveal what you already know. Every action that you do in this world, you do because of your unconscious motivations. Another way of describing unconscious motivations is habits and baggage from your last lifetime. Yes, everything that you do in this world is created for you coming into situations that will give you the opportunity to do restriction, that will give you the opportunity to learn the life lessons that you need to learn. You can choose a different cassette, one with less chaos by stronger restriction. Or you could do your own desires and have more chaos in your life until you wake up and decide to change it and decide to follow the path that you are supposed to follow. What does it mean, supposed to follow? There's no disappearance in spirituality, and there's no coercion in spirituality. God has a plan. Whether you choose to follow the plan or you don't, eventually you will follow the plan, either because you get tired of the pain and suffering, or you run out of time, the 6,000 years, and Mashiach comes. We only have 230 more years, 230 and a half more years, 230. We're in the year 5769 and a half. The year 6000, if we don't bring the Mashiach earlier, God will manifest it. The manifestation of that Mashiach through God's manner, the prophecies are called Armageddon, the wars of Armageddon. The war is called Gog and Magog, which means war of thought, war of consciousness. And you can see it developing in our society. Everybody has free choice, and everybody has human rights. And I have the right to do actions in the privacy of my home that go against spiritual laws. Isn't that true? Isn't that what the truth that our society teaches? And I don't disagree with it. But Kabbalah does disagree with it. Kabbalah says you have free choice. You do something in the privacy of your own home that goes against spiritual laws, there's a consequence. There's a boomerang law. It's going to bring chaos into your life. What's cause and effect? The people of California made their vote. Are they wrong? There's no right or wrong. It's not a question of right or wrong. It's not a question of me telling someone, don't do that. It's only a question of me creating the world in which I live. I want to masturbate. Nobody can tell me I can't. It's the privacy of my own home. The Zohar is very clear. A man who masturbates is going to be cut off from spiritual life. What does that mean? pain and suffering till he wakes up and does tshuva. Till he decides, okay, I can control this member. I don't have to do this. This pleasure is not worth the pain and suffering that comes with it. We have a whole society that has men, one of three men are getting cancer in this lifetime in Western society, or at least in the United States. And the majority of those cancer system people are prostate cancer. What's the cause? A society that teaches it's good to masturbate. So men chose to do that. They were given permission by the society around them, or they were given permission by the society they created. Go back 200 years. What did the church teach? Don't masturbate, it's a sin. Get married young so you don't have to, etc., etc., etc. We create the world we live in. It is never about me telling someone else what to do, but only seeing that what this other person does impacts me, for me to learn what my mirror is here to teach me. Consciousness. See yourself as a grasshopper, and you'll be a grasshopper. See yourself as a king, and you'll be a king. See yourself as a member of a group that brings Mashiach, and you'll bring Mashiach. Tomorrow night and Thursday night are conference calls teaching the Zohar. I recommend you all join us. Any questions before I sign off? Yes, America.
Okay. So, you're talking about expanding our consciousness,
expanding, not extending.
No, that's what I said. And, okay. Because let's say, I had a certain, career in my mind that I wanted to do that would bring me happiness.
Okay.
But then, after what you're saying, I'm realizing that am I limiting the happiness that can come to me by choosing this,
Just by asking that question, you've started on the path to discover the answer. Did I tell you do this or do that? First off, as a teacher, I wouldn't limit you to that, because you would be more inclined to listen to me as your teacher than somebody off the street. What does it mean to expand consciousness? Your sister is 3 years old. She loves to play with her toys. She loves to interact with you and your mother and your father. Her world, her consciousness, exists at the level of your house, your apartment where you live. Does she imagine a school with 30 other kids? No. 2 years from now, she will. Why? Because she will have experienced it. What is expanding consciousness? It's dreaming. What you dream is what you can make manifest. If you don't have a thought, you don't have a dream, you don't manifest anything. Cause and effect. Why did God create human beings with their head on top of their body?
What?
Because it teaches us that thought comes first. Thought is the keter, it's the crown. Where is your dreaming? In your head, in your brain. Bring it into your body. Manifest it with your hands. But do it in a balanced way. I dream that I'm going to control the world. a world that has enough resources for every human being to play out their dreams. I don't have to be dreaming that I control the world with people as slaves, which is the way Alexander saw the world. The civilization at that point could not see the concept of democracy. We live in a time where we can see the limits of democracy. What is the limit of democracy? The majority rules. The majority imposes its will on the minority. That's going against spiritual laws. The majority, the Torah says, the majority rules. Our sages came and explained that the majority is talking about knowledgeable people, not ignorant people. The Torah explains majority rules as long as it gives the minority the opportunity to become the majority. Expand your consciousness every day. That's the purpose of the Hebrew letters and the Anabekoach and the 72 names. Change your consciousness and stop limiting yourself. Yes, Fernando.
When you were talking about listening to people, that is so true, because for instance, in my business, when I'm going real estate to the businesses, when another person gets involved, it totally, collapses everything. And why do people, they both, my friends said, and they both like that, they don't do their own investigation, they don't ask questions, they just go whatever they're told. A friend said, blah, blah, blah. So easy.
And what is it for you to learn by having them say this to you?
Having them say that to me?
It's a rhetorical question. What I'm asking you to do.
Myself,
you created that person as your mirror. When they say, my friend said, and the deal drops away and goes crazy on you, you're not in control. The lesson is to learn that that's not the way to control.
No, what I tell them, give me my shirt. As me, as someone that knows. But don't go by what my friends said or so-and-so said.
But what they're really saying when they say, my friend said, is, I'm not sure I can trust you. That's an A explanation of what's going on in your life. It may be correct, it may be totally off base. The question I'm asking is, and it's a question that each of us has to learn, when something happens in our life, meaning somebody says something, that person is my mirror. Those words are for me to learn a life lesson. The sentence, I'm not happy, by a friend of mine talking over coffee, that sentence has a life lesson to learn. For me. Not for them. Yes, the truth is, their words, I'm not happy, is for them to learn. That's God's word, the way God works. He puts the two people in the conversation over coffee. The words that the person chose to use are for my mirror and for that person to hear for themselves. Every word I say to you, I'm talking to myself. If I don't hear it as talking to myself, I'm making a mistake. But ultimately, it's never about this person is wrong. This person is here to be my mirror. What can I learn? And asking that question is starting you on the path to spirituality or continuing on the path to a higher level of spirituality. Continuing expanding your consciousness. Cause and effect, which comes first, the answer or the question? Which causes which? The question is the effect. The answer is the fulfillment to the question. The fulfillment wants to be revealed. The question is the vessel for the revelation of that fulfillment. When you ask the question, what can I learn from this experience? There's a revelation that wants to be revealed. It's starting you on the path to reveal that revelation, to learn that life lesson, to expand your consciousness. Any other questions before we sign off? Good night, all.